This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
On air and on the road, Jay Groot is driven by the Tedbert Automotive Group, Tedbert Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Tedbert Chantilly Lincoln, and Tedbert Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Tedbert for Life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tedbert.com.
So, Jay, why don't we just start with yesterday specifically when you went back and watched the game. Was it about what you expected, better, worse on film? What'd you think?
Well, obviously the last few minutes was pretty chaotic on both sides of the ball, but the first three quarters, I think, you know, it just is a matter of taking advantage of great opportunities, and Washington didn't do it. With great field position opportunities to really jump out on them early and put your foot down and show who's a better team. Just let Dallas hang around, and unfortunately, some big plays at the end. Dallas got the win.
What did you see from this offense? Because the last 5 minutes, they managed about 200 yards and, you know, 20 points or whatever the heck it was, Jay. But for 55 minutes, not much doing for this offense. What have you seen from it here this week and really over the last month or so as it's kind of not performed like we saw early in the season?
Yeah, a couple things. Third downs is bad. You know, they're 12 for 38 in their last three games, 10 sacks. You know, time of possession is they're averaging 24 minutes per game in the last three games. A lot of that has to do with the ability to keep the ball, and they're not staying on the field on third down. They're really good early in the year, and right now they're struggling, and there's a lot of reasons for it. Sometimes it's pressure related. Sometimes Jade misses a throw. Sometimes there's no throw to be had. Sometimes you know we're working Noah Brown twice on third down in the game, and Terry McLaurin standing on the other side without getting an opportunity. So there's a lot of things they can clean up, but the most important thing is they got to do a better job on third down.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways we can go, but we were just talking about Daniels at the end of last hour, and I certainly wouldn't say he is the main problem or even one of the main problems. But yesterday, there were way too many times when I went back and looked, and even Dan Orlovsky just put together a little reel on ESPN where, you know, they're going to, say, Noah Brown, or he just kind of locks in on a throw, and the guy's not open, and it's an incompletion when Terry comes free on the other side, or you know, Zach Ertz is running free, and it just seems like he's kind of deciding where he's going to go. When that's happening, what does that normally tell you? And how much of that is like a confidence thing as he's been struggling lately? Like, what is your thought on that?
Yeah, you know, the couple times he went to know, one was on a slant on the outside. It's kind of really was his only option on that one. It was really good play by the defensive back. Noah didn't get much separation. Another one was on a deep curl. I think he should have come off of it, but you know, some of his pressure related. A lot of times it's hard to get off your number one target when you feel pressure inside of you. You got to get rid of the ball. I think he feels like, I don't know, it's just hard to point your finger at one thing. Sometimes it's pressure. Sometimes it's he feels like the guy is open. Defensive back makes a good play, and sometimes there's nobody open. I don't know. But it's easy to hold the film on pause, and then when the ball's gone, let it play again and see somebody come wide open. See, you should have held the ball and thrown it to this guy. That's not always the case when you have the ball in your hand and you're playing quarterback. But there are times, I agree with Orzlovsky, that he could have maybe held the ball a little bit longer. But that's easier said than done for a young quarterback learning.
Jay Grud with us here on G&D. What have you seen from this offensive line? Felt like early part of the season, maybe even up to halfway through, they were mauling people and Jaden Daniels was upright. I know the numbers don't really say that it's been bad, but it doesn't feel like maybe the holes are there in the run game as much, Jay, and it feels like, you know, they're, I don't want to say they're confused, but they're getting overwhelmed a little bit in the pass game. Just the eye test. What are you seeing from that group?
Yeah, same thing. The last three games, they only averaged 100 yards rushing per game, and yesterday, they had like 140, and Jaden had like 60 of it. So I don't think they're getting as much push as they did earlier in the year. They're not doing a lot of the same stuff they did early as well, some of the pin-pull things. And quite frankly, you know, they're just not getting the push. I think they're worn down a little bit. This has been a tough stretch for these guys. They've played a lot of games in a row, and they need that bye week badly, and it's coming up after this Tennessee game. They just got to buckle up one more week and get this big win against Tennessee. Then they can get a bye week, get their legs back, and then hopefully we'll see some more movement later in the year.
I mean, shouldn't the mini bye, like that was the most rest they've had since the beginning of the season against a team in Dallas traveling on a short week after playing Monday night with $100 million in salary cap on the IR. I feel like that should have given him a little bit of recharge of the batteries. It certainly worked for Daniels, who looked more explosive as a runner. Like, why didn't that trickle down, do you think?
I don't know. For one, if there's going to be a team to be able to run the ball and force your will, it'd be against the Cowboys because they haven't stopped the run all year. And I was surprised by that. I don't understand it personally, but I just know they don't look the same with the same pop they have coming off the line of scrimmage as they did earlier in the year. And they're playing good teams. They're playing the Giants twice, and they're moving the Giants, who have a really good defensive line, and other teams as well. So I don't know what the hell's going on. Maybe Dallas did a lot of movement, a lot of things that they weren't ready for athletically. But I can't put my finger on that one.
Yeah, Jay, let's get to the run game that you mentioned. If you go up against a really good defense, you may not be able to, run for 200 yards like it's Nebraska in the mid-90s. But this Dallas team has basically just rolled over and died in terms of run defense. Everyone's had their way with them, regardless of whether they want to stack the box and prioritize it. Teams have just beaten them up. Didn't happen at all yesterday, it felt like. And I think Daniels had, roughly half of the team's rushing yards, over 70. Running backs just weren't able to kind of get going there. What did you see from, just blocking scheme, O-line, everything with the run game?
Yeah, the scheme was fine. They just, sometimes when you do these double teams up to the linebacker, sometimes you leap too early and you leave the defensive lineman with a good angle on the remaining offensive lineman, and he gets the tackle. Sometimes you stay on too late and the linebacker knifes through there. There's an art to these double teams up to the linebackers, and Overshawn's a good linebacker. He does a good job playing off the double team and being really skinny, and Parsons is pretty athletic on the backside, tracking things down. So there's a lot of different issues when it comes to the running game. Tight ends are involved in it. Sometimes the back misses a hole. Sometimes I thought Jaden could have pulled a couple of them as well. So they just got to get back on track, get their confidence going. But I'd like to see him start to – I think the way Jaden finished that game against Dallas, his ability to move the ball down the field, throwing the ball, I'd like him to be a little bit more aggressive throwing the ball early in the game against Tennessee, because he really showed he really did a nice job there at the end, showing the accuracy and poise that we all know and love about him. So hopefully they become a little bit more aggressive, maybe use the pass to set up the run next week.
Jay Gruden with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, looking back at yesterday's loss to the Dallas Cowboys. What did you make of the decision at the end to kick the extra point? They'd already missed one. They'd missed a field goal, tie the game, go to overtime versus a two-point conversion.
I don't know. What'd you think of it?
Well, I think at home against an inferior opponent, I probably send the game to overtime generally.
Yeah,
I'm a big proponent of – I would go for two on the road against bad team or like a team that I'm better than. The team that I'm worse than all the time. But at home, this was kind of the opposite. The only thing I would say is that side of the field yesterday, there were at least four kicks missed total. I mean, so I don't know. It was just one of those strange games where it felt like their defense is fatigued. I got a cheat code short yardage quarterback who had a two-point conversion untouched earlier in that same end zone. Maybe I'll just end this thing now.
Yeah, I mean, there's merit to that. I don't think he's wrong either way, to be honest with you. If he goes for two and doesn't get it, people will be on him a little bit, but you appreciate the aggression. If he kicks it, goes into overtime, I feel like the team could win it in overtime. It's just one out of 100 that the kicker is going to miss an extra point. That's just crazy. Unfortunately, he missed it, but I don't think he'd be wrong either way, personally.
Jay,
Danny say? What do you say, Danny? Should he go on for two?
I'm very rarely a go-for-two guy. I just think everybody takes it for granted, like they're going to make it, and nobody deals with the repercussions.
Yeah. You don't like the nerves of, like, it all comes down to this one play.
Yeah, especially if I feel like I'm better than the team, I'd much rather play more football than less of it. But I see the point about on the road, I'd rather take one shot against a really good opponent, et cetera. So I never kill guys for not going for two.
Yeah, me neither.
So let me go into this in terms of sort of coach – player relationship right now, because things aren't going great for the first squad that started 7-2, where everything's coming up you're walking the yellow brick road. There's some adversity now. How would you handle things this week with Jaden Daniels, this offense, and everything else in terms of not necessarily pep talks? These are grown men, but like, what would you try to do to build back up?
I think you got to be ultra positive and let these guys understand that we're 7-5 and we're in the playoff picture right now. At the season end of the day, we're in the playoffs, and that's a hell of a goal. Before the season started, nobody gave this team a chance. And we did a great job early in the year, shocked everybody, but now we're struggling a little bit. But we got to get back on track against the Tennessee team. It's 3-8. They got a big win yesterday. They have some good players, I understand, but get to 8-5, get to the bye. Well, we'll regroup, figure some things out, and then make a late season run against the Saints, Eagles, Falcons, and Cowboys. I mean, this can be done. This season is far from over. There's a lot left on our plate here. We got to be positive and make sure we're all in coming Tuesday to work or Wednesday, whatever they start.
Jay, I don't know how much you've heard or read about or seen this Cliff Kingsbury regression storyline, but this goes back to Arizona, where EPA per play and, you know, pretty much every metric you look at, right? Success, efficiency, yards, points. Second half of all of his seasons, very different offensively than the first half. And sometimes it gets chalked up to, well, Kyler got hurt or he was playing through pain or whatever. But it's pretty much every single year he's been calling plays in the league. This has happened, and we're seeing it here. Do you think there's any merit to that, or is it kind of coincidental sample size thing? And if there is merit to it, what about his system do you think leads to it being solved and him now having to figure out a counterpunch?
Yeah, I don't know what happened in Arizona. I don't really recall that late season collapse. I know they didn't play very well when he got fired at all. But there's a lot of things that can be reasons for it. Injuries, you're looking at other teams that have injuries of key players. People get worn down. From an offensive coordinator standpoint, you do have to adapt to different teams you play. You have to throw some curveballs at the defense. You can't just run your same plays at the same formations. I think he does a good job in the running game, but I think some of his passing games, if I had any recommendations for him at all, it would be move Terry around a little bit. You can't always put him on the left. Use the word Buckeye. Noah Brown and Terry switch sides. It's not that hard. You know what I mean? Line him up on the right side. Put him to the field sometimes, not to the boundary when you're always on the left hash. You know, like the slant of Noah Brown. Let Terry run that slant route. Just say the word Buckeye. Let Terry be the outside guy. Those are just a few things that I would do different. But I think they have, you know, they have talent. They're just not over blessed with talent. You know, other than Terry and obviously the running game, now that D-Rob's hurt, Jaden's a talented guy. Zach Ertz is not a separating type tight end. He's a zone type of tight end. Noah Brown is a long strider, not with a lot of speed. He's a big physical guy. You love his effort, but he's not a guy that's going to get a lot of separation. And then their third receiver, who is it? Luke McCaffrey. He's not exactly a guy you want to separate. And he's not a Cooper Kupp or a guy in the slot that you can really count on third down and five. So in fairness to Cliff, where do you go on third down if Terry's getting covered? You know, that's the issue that he has. So he's got to come up with some creative ways to get these balls outside, some pass concepts to work zone and let guys have some access. And, man, it's easier said than done.
So, Jay, how did you think about how – this is sort of like double-edged here. Bear with me. As a coordinator, as a guy, as a play caller, coach, et cetera, how did you think about how opponents were going to look at what you were doing? You know what I mean? Almost like always anticipating their counterpunch with something else, right? Because obviously your base offense, it's who you are, it's your identity, it's how you call plays. But then as you kind of move through a season, knowing that they've got tape on you, how did you sort of think about evolving and maybe countering their counters?
Yeah, sometimes as the season goes on, it gets harder and harder because there's so much tape to look at. You know, you look at the blitz reel, you're like, oh, my God, this is the three-hour blitz tape. You know, you're looking at their different fronts. It's a nightmare. And you're never sure how they're going to attack you. You think about your best players, what they're going to try to do to your best players. Obviously, Terry and how they're going to keep Jade in the pocket. What's their base coverage system? What do they like to do in key situations? Third down, third and 2-5, third and 6-8. Try to break it down that way. But still, there's never an exact science. That's why, to me, it's very important to get in formations that will give you some pre-snap reads. Put the tight end outside by himself. If the safety goes out there, you know it's man. Put the back out there. Backer runs out there, you know it's man. If not, you know it's zone. Then you know what side of the field to work based on. Is it cover three or cover two? So you try to give your quarterback pre-snap hints to alleviate some of the confusion. I wish they'd do a little bit more of that. And then you can work your matchups in man, and you can work your coverage beaters in zone.
No Austin Ekeler, potentially, in the short term here. Unfortunately, he suffered what looked like a pretty serious concussion at the end of the game. He's a guy I really like as a matchup problem, too, on some of those like choice routes out of the backfield or some of the Texas stuff you could do where you get him running those arrow routes in the middle of the field and leaving linebackers. I mean, without that, it's another easy button that's kind of gone. Not that they were utilizing that all that much the last couple weeks anyway. Yeah. But, I mean, is there a way to replace that? Because my concern is I'm trying to figure out a way, and I don't know how to do it, but you do. Like, you got to get this guy easier answers, and the quick game stuff that was layups for him early in the year is gone. And how do I get back to that?
Yeah, they're relying on the screens, the perimeter screens, which a lot of teams do. Caleb Williams had a lot of success the last couple of weeks on perimeter screens and DJ Moore for big yards, and Cliff's done a good job of that, but those haven't been working quite as well as they did earlier in the season. Some of them are off the run alerts. If the loaded box, the box is loaded, you throw out a bubble screen to whoever it is. You get some positive yards there. But there are other ways to get some quick games and all that stuff. But I agree, losing Austin Eckler hurts. That's another weapon out of the backfield that can really work matchups against linebackers. Teams are starting to play tight man-to-man with somebody over the top of Terry, or Terry's having trouble getting access. You got to find somebody else. And usually the back has great matchups against linebackers nowadays because linebackers can't cover. Tight end against strong safeties. Strong safeties can't cover very good, but that's not a great matchup with Ertz right now in man-to-man. So, you know, they just got – I don't know where else they're going to turn. Terry's going to have a hell of a game. Otherwise, who are you going to work to as a running back now? They cut Chris Rodriguez, so what, do they have one back on the roster right now?
I guess he'll come back, but, yeah, that's where they're at.
Yeah, he's not much of a pass catcher. Maybe they go out and get somebody. But, yeah, that's a part of the game that a lot of people don't utilize. That's why I made it a point to have a guy like Chris Thompson on my team every week, because those are huge matchups and they're easy completions for the quarterback.
Is there a guy that you like that they don't use that you would say, hey, that guy needs the ball more? I got a name in mind, but I'm curious what you have.
I don't know him good enough, really. You know, McCaffrey's an interesting guy, but
that's
he's a rookie.
One, yeah.
He looks like he's got a little moxie to him, some separation skills. Not a very fast guy. I don't think he can really get up on people and threaten them with his speed, but it looks like in zone coverage he could be a guy that can run some option routes and things of that nature. I'd like to see him do a little bit more of that, especially on third down instead of working outside curl routes and slants all the time. So I'd like to work the middle of the field a little bit more, maybe with a guy like Luke or somebody.
Let's go around the NFL for just a couple of minutes before we let you go. I do like the way the Bears offense is trending. They lost in overtime to the Vikings yesterday, but Caleb Williams threw for 340, a couple of touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over. And with Thomas Brown, I'm not sure how well you know him, but I know you did a little work with the Rams when he was on that staff there. He seems to have at least gotten Caleb Williams more comfortable in that passing game.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the last 2 weeks they played very well. And I don't know if it was all in the coordinator. Maybe they're getting more confidence. Caleb's just throwing the ball to the right guys and getting the ball out of his hands. I don't think he changed a whole lot. But he is giving Caleb some easier throws on first and second down. And then Caleb is creating with his legs and off schedule like we knew he could. And he's not making mistakes and holding on to the ball and taking 10 sacks. I mean, that's huge. I mean, quarterbacks learn. I mean, hell, you know, college, he could do that. Pros, he's learning that, hey, I can do it occasionally. I can't do it on every play. Doing a much better job. I don't know if it's offensive coordinator, just Caleb figuring it out.
This Bo Nix, Sean Payton pairing seems to be paying some dividends. It just looks like they're a perfect match.
Yeah, they're doing good. I mean, Sean calls a good game, and Bo doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, he doesn't force the ball into coverage. That's his MO at Auburn, and that's his MO at Oregon, and that's his MO now. He's not going to make a lot of down-the-field shot throws like a Caleb Williams that are splash plays like holy cow, but he's going to protect the ball, and he's a very good athlete. He can escape pressure, and he makes good decisions. And if they punt, they punt. They're playing very good defense. They're playing great complementary football right now. Denver will be interesting to see how they finish out.
Jay, Saquon Barkley yesterday ran for 255 against the Rams and 302 all-purpose yards if you count in his receiving yards. He's on pace to break the all-time rushing record of Eric Dickerson. What do you make of him as an MVP candidate? Because it seems like there's an unwritten rule that if you're a running back, you can't win it now.
Yeah, no, he's definitely in the talks. I still think it goes through Josh Allen if he continues to play like he's playing with the guys that he lost. He's carrying the Buffalo Bills, man. He's unbelievable. I mean, quarterback's a very difficult position to play. So is running back. I get it, but I'd give it to Josh right now. Saquon 2, then Lamar 3, just because they've lost 4 games. We'll see how Lamar does tonight, but Saquon is definitely up in the running. I'd say they're 50-50 right now.
What do you make of Houston? I know, listen, Tennessee, they deserve credit for playing the way they did, but they didn't look right. Houston didn't, even when they were 6-2. It just didn't feel like the same good operation. C.J. Stroud hasn't been as good as maybe folks anticipated this year. What do you see when you watch them?
Offensive line issues big time, I believe. He's not getting much time. They get no holes for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has run over 4 guys that get 3 yards. I mean, he's an unbelievable back, and he's had a couple of really good games. He's done it all on his own. His offensive line's got to get their act together. I mean, they're not protecting very well. And then CJ's forcing throws down the field, very uncharacteristic of him, and turning the ball over, took the safety, 2 interceptions, I think, yesterday. So they got to do a better job of trying to get the line in sync and blocking better for their back so they don't have to put all the pressure on CJ. We got to remember he's only in a second year, for God's sake. So let's get the running game going and help him out.
The Giants are dreadful. They're 2-9 after getting beat 30-7 yesterday by the Bucs. Tommy DeVito in for Daniel Jones. If you were a head coach and you needed a quarterback, what would be your level of interest in Daniel Jones as a reclamation project? Like light, medium, or strong?
Well, you get him for $300,000, I think, this year, and then you get a compensatory pick if you don't like him. So I'd be very strong to get him in my building just to see how he is. I know what kind of guy he is. He's a great guy, very smart, loves the game. I'd like to just see his mechanics, see him throwing the ball, you know, in practice and routes on air just to get to know him a little bit. And who knows? I mean, changes scenarios or sceneries are very good for a lot of people. Look at the quarterback for the Vikings and all these other Sam Darnolds. These guys, sometimes they need Baker Mayfield. They just need another opportunity. Get out of the same system and learn and get better. They're still young.
Jay, thank you as always, man. Have an awesome Thanksgiving, okay?
You got it. You too.
Yeah, have a great holiday. There's our buddy Jay Gruden joining us on Grant and Danny. He is with us each and every Monday right here on G&D.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.
Great chopping it up with him. Excellent insight on Washington's offense and some of the changes he would make. That was fantastic. Good job by Jay.